Okay, hey, Merle. Welcome over 50 starting hey. Over Friday.
It's
happy
good
Friday
to be here. Hey, happy Friday to you.
Yeah.
What's going on over there?
Let's see. What is it? It is October 27th. Unbelievable. Oh, October 27th.
We do Merle, this every time. How did that happen?
Exactly. Where'd it go? It's almost Halloween. And we've had the most beautiful week. It is the most beautiful day right now. And I wanted to share what we saw about an hour ago when we went to go play with the doggies. This is the lake, Shaker Lake over here by us, and just stunningly beautiful.
Look at that sun coming up over those trees.
Just barely peeking up. And for those of you that are listening, every year I take these shots. It's just irresistible to take them. And I was just telling Merle that our iPhones today take such a, and Galaxies and most of these phones take incredible pictures now. So you can actually truly capture the, see the, all the ducks in the water and stuff.
Yeah. And the, absolutely beautiful.
I'd say next week will be absolute peak. Like you can see the colors.
It's a postcard picture right there.
It is every year. It's just, it's stunning. And you know, Lisa and I always talk about different places we're visiting and falling in love with Asheville and stuff like that. But we also have the conversation. It's not lost on us how lucky we are, how fortunate we are. We try to remind ourselves of this all the time. And Cleveland has a great cost of living. And you know, you got a lot of gray months too.
That's
hard. That's hard.
But you know, you've lived there pretty much my whole your life. Yeah, your whole life. And one thing is that I had lived there pretty much my whole life up until I was in my early 30s and then got away and moved down south. And now that I've had a taste of winter time not being gray the whole winter, I don't know that I could ever go back to that. That's depressing. That's a marathon right there.
It is. There's, you know, Lisa and I thank God for Lisa. I used to battle the seasonal affective disorder so badly. But since Lisa and I have been living together for about the past 6-7 years, whatever it's been, she loves fall and winter, especially fall. It's her favorite season.
I love fall too.
It's gorgeous, but she loves winter because of all the downtime. She doesn't feel pressured. We got to do something. And so we don't watch movies and TV at night until fall and winter. And
really?
That's when we binge.
Interesting.
And so because of all that, and because Charlie loves winter, that makes, it's his favorite time of year.
Really?
That makes me appreciate it. So it's so much easier on me now because I'm very, the gray skies can kill my mood.
Right,
and
me
too. Dude, I'm a recovering Browns fan. So you know,
hold on a second. Did you just say that?
Yeah.
Like you're a recovering Browns fan?
Yes.
Not because, a Browns fan any longer?
No, when they did that deal a year and a half ago to bring Deshaun Watson in and got rid of Baker Mayfield, it's like you tore up a playoff team to bring in this guy, a very questionable character, and sold the team. It's going to go down as the worst sports deal in history. It truly is. It's already the writing's on the wall. I knew it from day one. Most of us did. And so when I watch them, and I don't watch them as much, I'm always doing projects and I just keep tabs on it. And when they do their fantastic losses, like stealing a loss out of the jaws of victory, as they have been doing for 30 years, I laugh. It doesn't bother me a bit. And then I don't have the Browns Monday morning hangover. It's always gray in Cleveland on Monday. And after a Browns loss, it's devastating. So I don't have any of that anymore. So that's another thing why I can enjoy this time of year so much more. You look very distracted, buddy. Everything okay over there?
No. Everything's fine. I was just getting that internet distortion over here.
So I'm going to
turn off the internet on my phone.
You need every bit of juice possible.
That's okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Apparently, I just got the warning that my internet was compromised, but I'm good.
Okay. Good. Good. Yeah. I noticed that you freeze up over there a little bit, but yeah, we'll power through this. Want to mention last week's incredible show that I had with Dr. Glenn Livingston. Once again, second time that he and I have met together. I love talking to this guy. He's one of my favorite guests ever. He's just a terrific conversationalist. And the first time that we talked, I believe it was last February, and it was promoting his book, Never Binge Again. He's a psychologist, a very respected, renowned psychologist that had battled his own obesity and compulsion, eating food addiction, and has overcome it. It took him 18 years, as I recall. And he says, if I knew back then what I know now, I could have overcome this in months. And he goes, I'm helping like help 40,000 of his own patients. That's a study. That's from a study he's done, conducted his own self-funded study, as I recall. But he has over 1 million people that have bought his book, Never Binge Again. Now he has his new one. That's what we were talking about. It's called Defeat Your Cravings. It's a sequel to Never Binge Again. And he's like, don't even bother reading Never Binge Again. This is like a better version of that, where he gives you all kind of, it's two thirds of it. The first third is kind of telling you what food addiction is. And boy, that's a tough one, man. Imagine being addicted to food and you have to eat two times a day or so. It's like being addicted to heroin, but you got to take a little bit a couple times a day. Could you imagine? So it's a very tricky thing. And so the other two thirds of the book are just all these techniques to overcome your cravings. You can apply, we all have cravings. We all have our shortcomings. We all have our anxieties. You can apply this to just about everything. And I just had a great time talking to him. I learned so much. And so I just want to, I want to encourage you, first of all, to download his free book, Defeat Your Cravings, at defeatyourcravings.com, but also take a look at that, that video or Apple podcast, our podcast from last week. It was really, really good. Okay. With that, it was kind of funny that I came across this, Cleveland Clinic advice on the heels of this, of what I'm talking about. It's called To Eat Better, Relax. As your serenity rises, your cravings will fall. This is so tied in to our podcast last week. Now, because we can't go 1 week without talking about the sympathetic nervous system and the parasympathetic, it's what this all is about. Okay. It's what all of this is about. Here, I want to explain as concisely and clearly as possible what I mean here. The sympathetic nervous system, sympathy, right? Feelings. That's what, think feelings. That's how you remember the difference. Sympathetic nervous system is your fight or flight nervous system. You know what it was really for? It was for kicking into high gear when you're about to get chased by a bear. That's what it was for. Like, you know, over many years ago, not that long ago, really. 200 years ago, we needed this sympathetic nervous system, this fight or flight to kick in when we needed it, give us a huge dose of cortisol. And then when we get out of our horrible situation, we need to breathe and get back to our parasympathetic nervous system, which is where we can rationalize. It's called the eat and digest nervous system. Right. When you understand that we are all of a sudden no longer in those surroundings, what happens to us is our sympathetic nervous system, our fight or flight, can get kicked in by a bad email, by a client stressing us out, by somebody accusing us of something, by somebody on social media trying to cancel us. Sympathetic nervous system goes nuts, floods us with cortisol. That cortisol, you know, stress kills, right? Number one killer. This is what happens. So we have to learn how to get out of that sympathetic nervous system back to the parasympathetic. So in Glenn's book, he teaches us all these different methods for dealing with that. And one he calls the 7-11 breathing method, breathe in for 7 seconds, breathe out, exhale slowly for 11 seconds. I just wanted to bring that up because this piece of advice from the Cleveland Clinic will make more sense to you now. Okay, so it's called To Eat Better, Relax. As your serenity rises, your cravings will fall. Food cravings can hijack your better judgment. Instead of doubling down on willpower, boy, Glenn talks about that a lot, which usually tends to backfire, try making stress management as routine as brushing your teeth. Stress management, super important. While severe, acute stress can cause you to lose your appetite, Your routine, low grade stress can do the opposite. Chronic stress amps up levels of a hormone called cortisol, which supercharges your appetite for sugar, stripped carbohydrates, and fats. Research suggests that the practice of relax-based strategies, including mindful meditation, can reduce emotional eating. Incorporate a practice that works for you. We just talked about the breathing exercise. They mentioned it here. Whether that's a sitting meditation, yoga, tai chi, prayer, or breathing exercises. Keep in mind that many packaged desserts and snacks are engineered by irresistible. Those food scientists know exactly what they're doing. By the way, and Dr. Glenn's podcast, our first podcast from February, he talked about how he used to work in the food industry as a psychologist, doing studies and doing things like changing food packaging, candy packaging to a shiny bright red, tripled the sales. Things like that, because a bright red color means like a bright red apple. It's instinctual. You're going to say something?
We have to take a break.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I have like.
Okay. Hey, we had a little time out there. Merle was having a little connection. Yeah. A little connection trouble. All seem good now.
Everything seems good now. So okay. Yeah, it's rebooted the internet and rebooted my computer and here we are.
Nice. Good. Okay. I was just finishing up this thing about food cravings, which is incredibly important to a lot of us, because I want to ask you a couple of things about it too.
Yeah.
So let me just read these.
Have them.
Final two paragraphs. Yeah. But you built up a lot of techniques and a lot of knowledge.
Yes.
Okay. Here we go. Keep in mind that many packaged desserts and snacks are engineered to be irresistible. Those food scientists know exactly what they're doing. In your cupboards and fridge, replace packaged goods with vegetables, especially fresh or frozen, fruit, especially fresh or dried, legumes, nuts and seeds, whole grains, fish, and other nourishing whole foods. Besides that, they are brimming with nutrients. Whole foods help to keep balance, to balance your blood sugar, which in turn reduces cravings. That's the end of that. I'll also say that these processed foods are designed to give you empty calories. So you're staying hungry even though you're full. So you keep eating because your body's craving the nutrients.
I sure have noticed that.
Yeah. So what have you learned? What have you done? Again, just a reminder that you've been on that Activia. Did I say it right this time for the first time?
No, it's Optavia.
Optavia.
That's right.
You've been on that diet for about a year and a half, I'd say now.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm not actively dieting. I'm maintaining at this point. So I've done a pretty good job of that. I've been at basically the same weight now for about 6 months. So
isn't that great?
That's been, oh my gosh. And one of the keys is weighing myself every day. That way it doesn't get away from you that way. And I fluctuate, you know, I've got about an 8 pound fluctuation depending on how much liquid I drink. That really has a lot to do with it. So I could be anywhere. I do weigh myself around the same time every day. And I know that the 8 pound, you know, I'm a bigger guy, but I also know that sometimes I'll have salty foods and I'll retain water. And then when I stop having that, you know, maybe I had a bunch of salty nuts or whatever, I'll retain water. And then I don't really have a lot of salt, so that'll just go away over the next couple of days. I'll be right back to where I was again. So yeah, that's what it is. But this whole notion of food cravings, I didn't realize it before this program that I was in, that I was actually addicted to certain foods, in particular carbs. And I think that a lot of these foods, whether it's sugar or just, you know, just plain old carbohydrates, these things have an addictive quality to them. And when I stopped having those things, I actually felt nauseated. I kind of felt sick for,
I didn't know that.
I don't know, about 2 weeks, actually. I felt tired. I felt lethargic. I felt kind of nauseated.
Didn't they tell you that that was going to happen?
Yeah, they told me exactly that that was going to happen. Yeah. So I also noticed that when I... Because I'll indulge every once in a while and I'll go back to, I'll have something with like three slices of bread or whatever. And I can feel the difference over the next like several hours that I had this. So, and also if I have carbs or whatever, I'll have to go through that little process again. Not as long as it was the first time, but definitely have to go back to that. These things have addictive qualities. They, just like you said, just like the doctor said, they make it that way on purpose. I know we're going to talk about the addictive qualities of social media later on.
Yeah.
It's the exact same principle. They're using the exact same science. There's a dopamine aspect to this.
Oh yeah.
That you become, that's what causes you to become addicted to it. And they know it. And it's a gimmick. And it's just, it's called recurring revenue. It works for them.
I got two questions for you. One, do you avoid flour, with your diet? It sounds like you do. And two, to control cravings, do you can attribute that to the snack, the way that you snack with the Optavia?
Well, it is a good thing with Optavia because I'm eating, you know, something like 100, 150 calorie meal every couple, 3 hours. So that really helps to keep my blood sugar at a certain level so that I'm not spiking where I'm ravenously hungry and like at this blind hunger where whatever I can put in my mouth, I'm going to put in my mouth. It really circumvents that whole thing.
And what about flour?
But I do still have these moments where I don't know what to do with myself because I want to snack really badly. And what we've done is we basically eliminated those types of products from our house. So I'll just kind of go into the kitchen and look for something and just pace around just like, cause there's nothing like what, nothing. I found that like a pickle can in that situation.
Oh yeah.
Can
pickles are good too. Oh yeah. Pickles rock.
Squashing your appetite. Yeah, it's like a little bit of a miracle right there.
Well, also the vinegar.
So, you know, we have pickles. So if you ever
good. You would do well to go back and watch that last episode because there's a lot that Dr. Glenn talks about to overcome those cravings. Another thing that he's a big proponent on, we talked about a second ago, the willpower thing. You run out of willpower, and he says, this is brilliant. Like all his stuff is so, once he says it, it's an aha moment. You go, yeah, that makes sense. Like, why didn't I think of that? He says, you know, willpower is like you start on a full tank of gas, but by the time the day is done, you're out. You're out of it. So realize that. And so with his methodologies, it's largely about it's taming the beast inside and is making rules for yourself. Like, for instance, if it's as simple as I'm never going to eat flour Monday through Thursday of any kind, and you never break that rule, the beast will stop being tempted because it knows it's never going to do it. So willpower is out of the equation. It's not even affected.
Right.
So it's about making those kinds of rules. So anyways, I want to move.
And these are habits that you form, habits, right?
Yes,
that
yes.
And you know, what I heard
need
a long
to form
time
better
ago
habits.
That we've talked about this, that, you know, you do something for 21 days and you formed a habit. And it's so true that if you do these things for 3 weeks, then it becomes a automatic. It's like automatic. So you have to get over that hump, and these food habits, like you said, if you could come up with a thing where it's like, okay, French fries are my weak spot. Like I'm only going to have French fries at this time. And that's good. But you know, the problem with that though, is that you can, once you open up that gate, sometimes you can, well, I think I'll have 2 days a week or, you know.
Well, that's what he says is you can't do that. And when you break that one time, you have to be gentle with yourself, firm but gentle, and you have to go right back to back on the horse.
Forgiveness is a big deal. Like, you've got to forgive yourself. If you're beating yourself up all the time, that's actually going to lead you right into the thing.
Very true. Back to just to reiterate what you said, you got to replace some bad habits with some new good habits. That's really what it comes down to.
Right.
So Merle, we got a lot going on. There's a lot to talk about. I took a lot of notes between last night and this morning. I'm just going to run over through them, and then we'll go back and talk about them however you want, and add whatever. I know you got your own, but I see a common thread through everything going on here. Okay, I saw that Dave Chappelle says he's in trouble with the Jewish community after reported comments on the Israel-Hamas war. The Wall Street Journal reported that people had walked out of one of his shows after his comments on the conflict. I have a link to that story. We got the main shooter, the guy that just killed another 18 people. So there, all the calls for ban on guns again as a result, of course. Got the Facebook lawsuit. Judge gives $725 million Facebook settlement. And we got a link to that. And more news. Meta, who owns Facebook and Instagram, amongst other things, sued by 42 attorney generals alleging Facebook Instagram features are addictive and target kids. This is one of the most interesting conversations, I think. And then the polarization of America, left-leaning. Those are notes concerning that. Those are the main stories that I have.
And yeah, those are great stories. I mean, I see a common theme in these things too.
Yeah. So with Dave Chappelle, we got censorship and cancel culture. With the main shooter, we got the war on guns again, which becomes hypocritical very quickly. If you like look in California when the BLM riots started happening, gun sales went through the roof by all the people that want to ban guns. The Facebook lawsuits with the addiction to social media. This is about censorship versus non-censorship. I find this incredibly, the part about Meta being sued by 42 attorney generals for the addictive features that are said, they are said to have known of these, which of course they do, of these addictive qualities and tried to enhance them. Lisa and I talked about this briefly this morning, and she's like, this is just like the cigarette industry, the tobacco industry, all those years ago that knew about the addictive quality of cigarettes, were pumping up the tar, the addictive qualities, got sued. We should think about social media. We should talk about social media in these regards right now, don't you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, these things are, when we're talking about social media right now, we can see a change. I was just talking about this on another podcast, actually, where we're talking about this surveillance that's happening, and that's where the lawsuit came from, and also these addictive qualities that are happening. We did a show on Freedom of the Press, Cyber Talk TV. Rex Lee is the expert in this area, and he's talking about this phenomenon where you can link social media and the rise of social media to suicides, especially suicides amongst the younger people, 12 to, let's say, 24 years old. These people are the ones that have been mostly affected, and the suicide rates are unreal when you take a look at the correlation. I was telling a story about how I remember when I first got my iPhone. It was in 2011, and it was for a new job that I had gotten. I really resisted it because I didn't feel like I needed all of this, but I was going to need to connect up to the email system. So therefore, the smartphone was what I needed to have. And I remember that very first day I had to fly to Indianapolis. I met my new boss and one of my colleagues that I just met for the first time. We went out to dinner. We sat down at a table. I'm just meeting these guys, and we sit down, and the two of them break out their phones, and they both get into a real comfortable position and just they don't talk to each other. We don't talk. They're 10 minutes go by. We haven't said a word, but they're looking at their phones. I didn't have email connected to my phone, so I didn't have anything to do except for look around the room. And so I thought this was really weird. This is an odd meeting and everything. I look around the room and there's a family sitting next to me, and it's a mom and a dad and two kids that look like they're probably tween, 11, 12 years old. No, they're not talking to each other. They're all looking at their device. They're absorbed in their device and not a word. I look around the rest of the restaurant. That's exactly what's going on. No one's talking to each other anymore. They're living there. And I'm like, it looks like they have a life.
I got to tell you
outside
something.
Of this. They're like, this is it. Go ahead.
I just thought this morning at the gym. Because I was listening to a podcast that was also talking about exactly this because of, well, this Facebook Meta stuff just came up in the news as of like last night and stuff. Yeah. So it's a big deal. But I was thinking that it's funny how we all talk like everybody else is on their phones all the time. And I thought it would be a great skit to show like say you're in an airport and you could see like 50 people in your camera view, and there's one person standing there, everyone else is staring at their phones, and you hear that person's voice go, "My God, look at everyone, just addicted to their phones. This is so sad. What's happened to our society?" Then he pulls out his phone, starts looking at it as the camera pans over, and you see one guy put his phone down and put it in his pocket. Now he's the only one not on his phone, looking around going, "Oh my God, look at everyone. Everyone's so addicted."
Oh, that's hilarious.
How sad it is to our society. We're all like that. We're all like that.
You know, it's funny you're saying that because, Tristan Harris, one of the founders of Google, says that.
Was that Facebook? I thought it was Facebook.
Yeah, Facebook. He was involved in Facebook as well, but he's actually a Google founder as well. He was saying that we look at our phones 150 times a day. That was back in 2016.
Oh, really?
Now that we've got all these other apps that are connected to other things, I'm sure that it's at least double that now. Yeah. And I bet you it would be interesting because we don't know, right? Like, I don't track how many times I look at my phone.
Right.
But I'm just like you, Barry. I'm like, well, I don't do that.
Right.
Yet, that thing goes off. And there's a thing. There's a payoff. They know what they're doing.
Dopamine hit. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And as soon as that thing goes off, you can't help it. You're what is it? You're totally distracted.
But
you're
say
in
this.
A conversation. Yeah. This
you,
is this
you
is
and
crazy.
I both have gotten away from social media as a result of just awareness.
We have. We
and
because
to our
we,
credit.
We realize what we saw the movie Social Dilemma, and we heard the very makers of these things confess that we did this. We did this on purpose. God only knows what it did to our children's brains. So.
I think a lot of people have become aware. I saw a lot of my peers, a lot of my friends on Facebook. Fallen for all of it, hook, line, and sinker, calling everybody Nazis and racists, friends and family. And that's when I was like, oh no, I'm out. I can't do that. And I'm sure you could dig up a couple of not tweets. I almost never tweet, but Facebook posts or something I wouldn't be that proud of. But it was when I saw that happening a few years ago. I'm like, nah, I got to bow out on this. So I post and ghost now. But
that's actually post and ghost. I like that. I do the same thing. Cause you look at the comments and everything.
Yeah.
And it's so discouraging.
Yeah.
And so why do that? Don't do that anymore. To your point, as you were watching this news article and you were talking to Lisa and saying, didn't this come out a while ago in the article that you sent over? It's Frances Haugen. Was the one that had come into, she was the whistleblower that came in a few years back in 2021 to
say,
are
we talking about Meta right now?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. She was the one that came in and said that Meta had done their own research and had come up with the fact that, hey, we're damaging young people with what we're doing. We're actually causing mental harm to our subjects here, our customers. And here are the very studies. She went up in front of Congress to show them. Here are the studies that show that Facebook, Meta is harming people, and we know it.
Instagram is actually, let's just for the record, Instagram is, the younger people are more into that. And
that's right.
Okay.
That's right. And what they, and this is all part of Meta as well. And yes, what they found on Instagram in particular was how young girls were affected by body shaming feeling inadequate. Yeah. And this was really leading to mental health problems that they were having and eventually suicide. And this all came out in 2021, right in front of Congress, and then nothing. We didn't hear anything. Now, think about that. What did the federal government do after they heard that? They did nothing. And now we've got 42 attorneys generals that are going after this. Thank God. It's not the federal government doing this. It's the states. You've got 42 states involved in this.
It gets really tricky here.
And it's the great thing about this is that it's not just Republicans. It's not just Democrats. This is Democrats and Republicans finally agreeing on something, which is you're harming our children. Protect the children. How come the federal government isn't interested in protecting the children? You know, this is the interesting thing, Barry, is that you've got Meta up there. All the other social media companies are doing exactly what Meta does.
Yeah, correct.
And you've had, I mean, TikTok is doing it. They've been in front of Congress as well. And they were lambasted in front of Congress, yet nothing has happened. And
it
so
is
that's
said,
what we're seeing.
I heard this morning that social media has the largest lobbying group in Washington today.
It's absolutely the truth.
Well,
absolutely.
Dude, if that's the truth, it's so big, we can't wrap our heads around it, because I know that back at the 2008 crisis that happened, the economic crisis that happened, that after the smoke cleared, I guess it was 2010. 2010 was not that long ago. It was 13 years ago. It was said healthcare lobbyists was by far the biggest lobbying group in Washington. It was said that there were 5 healthcare lobbyists for every Washington official in Washington. So if now social media is bigger than that, what the hell do we got going wrong with our government and the lobbying? Lobbying is necessary that we consult companies. Otherwise, we'd have politicians running our businesses, which who the hell wants that? I mean, so you see the necessity. But the fact that it's gotten so out of control, I mean, it's a huge problem. Now,
well, and it compounded by the fact that most of our people that are in Congress are attorneys, and there is an incestuous relationship between our Congress and these lobbying firms. Many of the lobbyists themselves are former Congress people. And so the unfair thing is that they know Congress like the back of their hand, and they have their influences that they can draw upon in Congress. So it's a fix. Like you said, who wants politicians running our businesses? But when you have this incestuous relationship between K Street, where the lobbyists are, and Congress, that's exactly what you get. Mm-hmm. And there's no way to stop it until we start to put guardrails on what these lobbyists are able to do and how much money they're able to contribute. Because if you look at the social media contributions
money should be zero
that are coming in, it's astounding how much money these people have and how much money they're using to manipulate our government. Yeah. And this is where this notion of fascism comes in, because it's no longer our government of we the people or government of the people, for the people, and by the people. It's now become government by the elites, the rich business leaders, the robber barons. We've talked about the hedge funds, which are really controlling about 95% of our businesses here. Mm-hmm. And those people are not usually Americans that are running this. They're globalists, and they have an agenda that does not match up to the freedoms that we have here in the United States. In fact, our freedoms actually stand in, they're an obstacle to these people.
But let me ask you this. This is where things get very tricky. So what do we do about Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, X? That, by the way,
first just off,
heard this morning, X, their numbers are super, super down in all regards, advertising, viewership, and signups, all of that. And that's a whole nother issue. That's an Elon Musk redoing things and the left versus right and blah, blah, blah. Back to Meta and other social media in general, that the kids are being addicted to it intentionally. Okay, let's talk about censorship. Let's talk about freedoms versus regulation of social media. Man, that's a slippery slope.
Well, you ask a great question, and here's the number one thing that we can do is enforce our antitrust laws, because what we have going on right now is, and you've said it before, Barry, this is a monopoly.
Yeah, sure.
And what you have is you've got Meta and you've got Twitter and you've got, Google,
yeah.
You've got Microsoft, and basically they control everything. If you want to develop an app, you've got to go to these people. It's basically like this. There's a freeway that they own, but you have to use that freeway in order to live, right? But they only have they're the only ones with a freeway. So in order to live, you have to pay them ransom. And it's a high price to pay. The price that you have to pay is literally your privacy and your freedom. That's it. And not only that, if you want to do business as an app developer, you have to do business with these entities. Yep. And in order to be on their freeway, you've got to pay like $1 billion to be on their freeway. Now, once you pay that $1 billion, you're going to make a lot of money and you're going to be the only one able to make that money. Here's the unfortunate part for us using the freeway as consumers. The app developer now has permission to steal all of your data. They can steal data from your email, your text, your location, your phone calls, they can tap into your camera, they can tap into your microphone at any time they want to. And not only that, this information that they take, they sell to data distributors, they sell it to advertisers. In other words, you're paying an exorbitant amount of money for the device and also for airtime, and they're using what you've paid and they're making money off of you. It's like they should be paying you for stealing your data and using that to make money. But really, when you look at this, it's really digital slavery that's happening. You have no rights. You're completely used in every single way. You've enriched them, and you actually not only have not made money, but sometimes you end up with mental harm, and not to mention the financial crisis that we're all in. I don't even believe, looking at my phone, these things are like $1,000 or more just for the darn device, and then you got to pay airtime. These are outrageous. This whole thing is outrageous.
Okay, but what do we do about our kids being addicted to it and the depression that follows, the suicide?
Here's the thing.
Now, you're also going to say, well, parental regulations, there are parental controls on these phones and blah, blah, blah. And now we also have a thing, an issue, not only about censorship, but about personal responsibility.
I personally think this. It's the free market that's been damaged here, Barry. And if people have choices to go to platforms and devices that they know do not steal their information, and they know that they have that choice, they're going to make that choice.
But no, that's not true. TikTok, everybody knows the harm of TikTok. It's China. And when you talked about people stealing information and can take over your phone and spyware and all that, that's primarily TikTok.
Well,
and everyone knows that and they don't care.
I understand, because they don't have a choice now. Yeah, there's no choice. What is the choice?
Well, you got everyone's trying to adopt this stuff. Like YouTube has been doing shorts. Instagram has been doing reels. There's a number of social media, tons and tons of social media out there that I don't even know of. I mean,
that's
I hear
the problem.
About them.
That's the problem, Barry, because these operating systems have monopolized the choices you have. Are not plugged into the mainstream. And therefore, the problem is that they've created a monopoly where you can get everything that you want. If you try to go to one of these other places, it's not going to have the features that you need. It's not going to be able. The problem is this. you need to have this media in order to survive these days. You have, in order to be in business, you've got to be on social media. You have to be, in order to participate in society today, you have to be plugged. You got to have a smartphone. You absolutely do. Yeah. But your smartphone, the devices, the devices you can get today are all compromised. Where can you get a phone that's not compromised today? That's my problem, Larry, is that you, yes, if you had a choice, you might choose to go to something safe, but you don't have that choice because everything is compromised right now that you can get. And if you do get something that's not compromised, it doesn't have the features and functions that you need in order to operate into today's society. The reason is because of the monopoly that's cut all of these other providers out of being able to actually provide for you.
But about Meta being sued, Instagram, all of that, about the addictive qualities, what kind of regulations should be passed?
I don't think there should be regulations. I think that what should happen is that people should compete on their merits. And if you want to be taken advantage of by pirates, then stay on Meta. And if you want to not be taken advantage of by pirates, then choose the other provider that doesn't do that. There are providers out there like the Purism is a company that is putting together. Purism is what the name of it. They're see, that's the problem, right? It's because the monopoly has cut those kind of companies out, so you never hear about them. They won't advertise those.
What kind of platform is this?
I don't have all of the details on this. This is a company that I know that Rex actually is working with. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be providing a device, and they're going to be providing an operating system to work on that is not compromised. But the problem is that you've already got these mainstream, and they have to be broken up in order to have this free market work. But this is what I'm saying. I don't like all the regulations, okay? Mm-hmm. In a free market, people should have the choice. And in a free market with free press, we put out information on, hey, if you go and use Facebook, here, watch Social Dilemma and see if you like that. Now use this other product.
But let me throw this out at you. Speaking of free markets, thinking about this stuff as, and I think this is a very appropriate comparison, like the tobacco industry. Well, tobacco is illegal to, I don't know if it's 18 or 21. I think it's 18 cigarettes.
I think so too, yeah.
Okay, so let's, you know, say that we see that we're destroying our kids with this social media. So instead of leaving it simply up to the parents, what if, okay, I think if I heard this right, I think I heard that TikTok agreed and has implemented stuff that when you sign up, you have to be a validated identity, that you go through a number of hoops to have a validated identity. And if you're under 18 or something like that, it has a 1 hour cutoff point per 24 hours. That's interesting.
Well, they've talked about implementing that. They don't have that right now. They do have that in China right now. That's actually why they're talking about it. The experience that they're having in China with that platform is 100% and diabolically different than the experience that we're having with TikTok here in the United States. Well, it's true.
Really? Tell me. Explain that briefly.
Well, in China, what they use TikTok for is completely different. Kids are allowed to be on TikTok. It has throttled down to about an hour and a half a day that they can be on TikTok, but it is an educational platform for them. None of the stupid videos that we're seeing, none of that is happening on TikTok over there. It is purely educational. It is actually used as a tool to indoctrinate their kids into the CCP mind frame, but it is actually an educational tool over there, where it is really sent here to rot the minds of our young people. It's used as a weapon against us. It's used as a tool for them to grow their population. It's a weapon. Wow. And that's why this was in That's why this is in the federal courts, or not the federal court system, but it's in our legislature. That's why they were talking about it, because of how this is actually being used as a weapon against us from a country that's really posing as an enemy to the United States. Not to mention that TikTok is, I mean, you look at TikTok's platform, it is a CCP platform that can steal all of your information off of your phone, and they're particularly interested in intellectual property, and that's how this is used. And of course, it can be used in many other nefarious ways too.
Back to the top of my notes. Dave Chappelle says he's in trouble with the Jewish community after reported comments on the Israeli-Hamas war. When I go through the news, and you know, Google News is a great place to go, because you can see, and I had it up here somewhere, but I lost it. But you can see Fox is reporting this. The same story is reported by CNN. And you're seeing.
I like that too.
Yeah, yeah. But what you always see, if you take that flyover viewpoint, is everything is designed still to divide and to get you emotional. And, you know, I mentioned that I like to go to the Daily Mail, where it's kind of, you throw some tabloid in there and some loose morals, and then it's just like all this on steroids. And I watch, they have a comment section. Now, no, anything on the left, there's no more commenting. Ever. I watched it dissipate. It used to, Huffington Post, I believe, as far as what I saw, was the last man standing.
Really?
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Cleveland.com, which every city has their Chicago.com or whatever their news sites, which is virtually like the Plain Dealer. They did away with it about 3 years ago. That's when I stopped going there. A lot of people stopped going there. And when you can't, the best thing about comments is to be questioned. To have your feet held to the fire. And yes. When you can't do that, and I, to Fox's credit, I was checking out Fox deep last night so that I could talk about this right here. They do not censor the comments. To YouTube's credit, they usually don't censor the comments. They're either censored all or none, right? Either you can't comment on a video, or they will censor a video entirely. I mean, they're terrible in that regard. But what I mean is, when there's comments, the comment section is open on stuff. It's open, and you get all the opinions, and you get the infighting and all that. But right. I think that that's important to let truth rise to the top. And so I have to give Fox a lot of credit that they have a free and wide open comment policy. So, but when you go to the Daily Mail, it's insidious. I think it's a good example of overall what is going on in this country. They will say, they'll either say no comments, very rare these days, or comments are moderated, or they'll say comments are not moderated. And it's complete BS when they say comments are not moderated, because I'll go on to these the things about the Palestine versus Israel thing. And I'll say, you guys do realize everyone is just being incentivized for divisiveness. Yeah. We should stay out of, do you realize what we've, I made many comments. I do this as an experiment, made many comments like, look what's happened in Vietnam, Afghanistan, Iraq, Yemen. I mean, name it, Ukraine. We leave a disaster behind of hundreds of thousands of deaths and billions of our dollars. What is up with that? And all of these comments that I make, even if they say they're not censoring, they're not moderating, they don't get through. They do not get through. Wow. No, all you got is the, murder those SOBs, those kinds of.
Wow.
Seriously, that's the world we live in. So back to Dave Chappelle. He has people walk out of his show. I'm going to just talk about comedy in general a little bit right here. If you're walking out of a Dave Chappelle, first of all, if you pay the money and take the time to go see Dave Chappelle live, you must have seen him at some point in the past, right?
Right.
What
right.
does he do? He baits everybody. He's like, he'll start talking your language and then these people with these guns did, and then he pulls the rug right out from underneath of you. And you feel stupid, like, oh my God, I fell for that. And he'll do it to both sides. So if you're getting offended at a comedy show and you're wanting to censor him and make your little protest, I don't know. I think there's something wrong with you, not with Dave. Don't you?
I do. It, you know, it's, you're making such great points here, especially now.
It gets with me fired all
of
up,
the
though.
With all of the turmoil that's happening here in this country. It's so important that we have comedians like Dave Chappelle.
Yeah.
And I mean, we need more people like him. And he's not saying that everything he says, I don't agree with
sure.
a lot of things that he says. But the interesting thing about comedy in a free society is that the comedians are able to speak to things that are taboo, that we can't normally speak about.
That's and they comedy can, at its best.
They can make points that make you think. Now, you sent me that article about Dave Chappelle and how people laughed when he said these jokes. Did you have, I noticed in the article that they didn't actually say what the jokes were. Did you know what, do you know what the jokes were?
No, I don't.
I do.
Oh, please tell
me. I got to hear the jokes. And here's what's interesting about it. He's talking, these jokes referred to the situation that's happening today, but he tells these jokes in a way that cause you to see the situation without actually being in the emotional state that we're all in about the situation, so that we can see it more clearly, or at least from a different perspective. So here's what he said, is that he said, you know, And this really captured me, Barry, because you and I talk about this whole thing about UFOs and aliens and everything. And so that's what he started talking about, is these UFOs. And he says, you know, are there really aliens out there? And what's going on with that whole thing? He says, the more I think about it, the more I want to make a sci-fi movie. And here's my idea, is that these UFOs that we're seeing are actually human beings that used to live on the planet. All right. So an ancient civilization of people that lived here, very sophisticated, had the technology to leave the planet. And they left the planet because they were seeing, I can't remember if he said it was the Ice Age or whatever it was, they were seeing this happen and they left the planet and they found another planet to live on. Well, they lived there for a long time, but things didn't work out for them. So they packed up and they came back to Earth. And that's what you're seeing today. And they want their planet back. And then he pauses for a second. He goes, I call it space Jews.
Really?
And so then it's like, you got to think about it for a second. Uh-huh. You're like, space Jews. First off, it sounds funny. But then you think about, oh, he's talking about the history of Israel and how Israel had gone away for a long time, actually 2,500 years. And then they come back and they get their land back. And then he goes, and then somebody yells out something, free Palestine. And he goes, it's going to get a lot worse from here. And so, first off, I don't, this whole thing, people left this. I don't know if that's true, Barry. I don't know that anybody actually left because of what you just said. If you don't expect Dave Chappelle to talk about current situations and make a joke about him somehow, then you, what are you doing at a Dave Chappelle show?
Right.
I can't, and I don't think those tickets are cheap. So right. I think if anybody walked out, they were planning on walking out to begin with. That they were probably paid, probably had the tickets paid for by somebody like George Soros or something, because they know that this is so American to be able to make a joke about this. It's what Saturday Night Live used to do.
They don't
do it any longer. Anyway, so then later he tells another joke, and I didn't get all of the details on this, but it goes something like this, that it's about, you think that he's talking about a black man who was a slave and but he gets his freedom. And not only that, but he also gets the money. So what he does with the money is he goes and he buys a property of his own and he gets slaves of his own. Outrageous, right? Now he's got slaves. Not only that, but the other slave owners are like, that had oppressed him. in a terrible way are like, yo, dude, you're kind of hard on your slaves over there. You know, these terrible slave owners were saying that. But this guy is like, no, I'm just living in a society where, you know, this is how you make money and this is where it's done. Now that I have my freedom, this is how it's done. And he goes, and ironically, I call this movie Space Jews. Again, and it's like, this is his thing about how, look, the Jews were slaves, and, you know, people perceive this whole Gaza Strip, as they've said it, an open air prison, mm-hmm. and all of this kind of stuff. So all he's doing is putting these conversations into a perspective,
yeah,
that
there you
we
go.
Could then speak about it, mm-hmm. Where it's okay to speak about it and talk, and you're looking at, I mean, when he said that first joke about, you know, coming back to the planet, yeah, and everything, because yeah. I'm thinking about these conversations that we had, and I'm like, they can't have our planet, I'll shoot them out of the sky. And then he says Space Jews, and I'm like, oh, huh,
you gotta think, you gotta know a little bit, a little bit of the history.
Put a whole different perspective mm-hmm. on it just with that joke, and you could tell people absorbed that in a way that they could never have absorbed it, and it worked for me too.
You
and
know,
that's
the moral,
important, it's the very, moral very
to,
important.
The moral to the story there is he's saying, gotta open up dialogue, because mm-hmm. people are shutting each other down, shooting each other down. Don't say that. Don't talk like that. Censor that. It's what we've been talking to. And he's saying, we got to talk about it. He's not saying take this side or that side. We got to talk about it.
That's right. In fact, in you see it in the article, but he doesn't pick sides. And in fact, what he says is, I don't want anybody to be hurt.
Same. That's my 100% my point. Yeah.
This is it. I don't want anybody to be hurt either. And from my Christian perspective, I see this a lot differently than I think a lot of people see this, is because what they see is a Jewish versus Palestinian thing.
Yes.
And I see it as more of a God versus Satan thing. And I don't see, and I see God seeing people as just people that he mm-hmm. loves. Yeah. He doesn't see Palestinian or Jew. He sees people. Now, the whole thing about Israel is that the Lord in the Bible has picked out Israel to reveal himself through. But when you think about it, it's like people think, oh, so the Jews are a special class then, and they're special and they're different from us. No, that's not what God's purpose was, because when he picked out that race of people, he picked out a guy named Abram. Abram was not a Jew. He was a guy that lived in Iraq at the time. And God says to him, I'm going to make kings come out of your seed. It's going to be my seed. And I'm going to cause nations, and I'm going to cause a savior to come through you. And he's like, what? And then he tells him to go to the land where Israel is now. And he gifts it to him and tells him these prophecies, that the prophecy is that through him and his seed, it will save the world. Not Jews, the world. And so what Jesus does in the seed is Jesus, and he's revealed through Israel, the 12 tribes of Israel. Israel's a person's name. His name is Joseph. He had 12 kids, the 12 tribes of Israel. It's a person, okay? Israel means prince. Jesus is revealing himself through this family, and Satan hates Jesus. He doesn't, and therefore he hates people. He wants people, Jews, Gentiles, everyone to die. That's his whole purpose. He wants to kill us. Now he uses us, and he divides us so that we're at each other's throats. And the most favorite thing he can do is come up with a conundrum that no one can solve, that makes everyone so outrageously angry that they can only operate through their emotions. You talked about it earlier, the parasympathetic nervous system.
Right? The sympathetic is the fight or flight.
Sympathetic, there it is. That is the doorway for Satan.
Yeah,
he can't come in through that other door. What was the other one?
Parasympathetic is irrational.
He can't. That's not his... because he get there's no you when you're into the rational mode, anything that Satan puts out there doesn't make sense, because he's the god of confusion. Okay, so when you get into that mode, you effectively shut the door on
you know,
him.
But look at this
situation; it's all emotions. It's blind fury.
Oh, for sure,
perfect fodder. It's a perfect soil for Satan to have his way. And we saw. I sent you that RFK video earlier this week.
I don't remember
RFK. RFK Jr.
Maybe I missed it.
Oh, well, RFK Jr. put, you got to see this, Barry. He put out this video this week, and it's called, hold on, let me just see this.
I'm going to see if I can find you.
I texted it to you. It's called My Story of Transformation. It's about 8 minutes long, and in it, he talks about what we need for today. He tells a story in this video about how he himself was a heroin addict for 18 years.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Oh, I'm surprised you didn't know that.
And he then talks about how he had to make these decisions on how to get out of that whole thing. And then he starts to talk about how forgiveness and love go together, and how this is the thing that's going to change the world, is that you may not agree with somebody, but you have to make a choice to love that person. Mm-hmm. And this is how we're going to break down barriers. This is how we're going to break down walls. This is how people are going to change. And this is exactly what we need right now. And I totally agree with that. Mm-hmm. We have to take these situations and look at it for what it is. There is an enemy to the people out there, and it and I believe that it's Satan, and he wants to divide us so that we can't speak to each other, so that we don't have love in our hearts for each other, that we don't love our neighbor anymore, and we disunify. And when we disunify, we just get, I have a pastor friend that says it this way, is that Satan will eat your lunch and pop the bag. Just, you know, that's what he does. And that seems to be what's going on right now.
You don't even have to be Christian to totally agree with you, because
that's what Kennedy was saying.
Yeah, people have seen this throughout all of time. If you want to overthrow a nation, the first thing you do is divide them. And that's the whole LGBTQ XYZ thing. It's just divide everybody as much as possible. And, you know, it's like we talk about all the time. We don't care if you want to wear a dress or what your thing is, but quit telling me I care about it until I get emotional about it. And now we're worrying about it, you know?
Yeah. And then they're like, see?
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, going back to what Dr. Glenn Livingston said about overcoming your cravings, about the sympathetic nervous system being the fight or flight, it's the emotional one, gets you worked up. Now you've got that cortisol running. You want to do something about it. Well, before you get too far, do a 7-Eleven breath. Do something, count to three, do anything that you can to break the cycle. And if you're on social media, do the same. When you're starting to get worked up, one, it's time to tune out. It's time to turn it off. But the other is take a breath, take a step back and look what's going on. See the forest through the trees type of thing, and know that you're being manipulated.
And this is such great advice. You know, I learned this from my wife, where she taught me, she had learned this early on, is that when you're trying to break a habit and you have these cravings, do something else. That's it. Just your mind can really only focus on one thing at a time. Take a walk, get on your bicycle.
Exercise is the best.
Yeah. Get on your motorcycle, whatever it is, you got to do something, because I would be in that kitchen pacing around and everything, and she'd just be like, go outside, get some sun or whatever it is.
Good advice.
Yeah, it's great advice. So, I agree with what you're saying, Barry.
All right, let's talk about for a minute, just switching gears, about the main shooter. And of course, every time one of these things happen, it's all about back to the gun control law. And when I take a look at what's going on in the newspaper, and I'm putting it all together, and some people are clamoring about taking away our free speech, call it hate speech. Boy, I tell you what, when I hear the term hate speech anymore, it's like,
burns my stomach.
I know what's coming. Yeah, you want to censor everything. Gotcha. Because everything's hate speech. Right. Whatever you disagree with is hate speech.
Right.
So censor us, take away free speech, and take away the guns. And I know what's coming after that. After that, the collective is going to be really happy for about 6 months and then starving about 6 months later. That's called communism. So with the main shooter, now I will certainly be the first to get in line and say, we need to really, really clamp down on gun laws, on what it takes to get a gun, to be licensed with a gun, and maybe have your gun taken away if a felony or some, you know, crazy stuff happens in your life. And that's about where I go with it. What are your thoughts?
I think I agree with that too. I think that it's interesting that you coupled the gun thing with the First Amendment as well. You know, there's a censorship and then they want to take your guns. It's funny that those are the first two amendments.
Yes.
And you gotta, you know, these are the Bill of Rights that we're talking about. And those were the first two. And those are the things that they're coming after the most. And why do you think that is? And I know why it is because it's the linchpin to our freedom.
Yes, correct.
And that if we have freedom of speech, and why isn't the right to have guns the First Amendment and then freedom of speech the Second Amendment? That's also a very interesting thing because freedom of speech includes freedom of the press. And freedom of the press includes our ability to know what's happening in intimate detail with our government because they're accountable to us. And if we know that they're actually turning against us, then we know through history that it's an existential threat to the citizenry. And that's why we're allowed to defend ourselves with guns. And we've seen other countries that did not have that right, which is most every other country in history.
Right.
And we've seen where the government, there's no freedom of the press. The government can just run roughshod over the citizenry and their chattel. They're slaves to that country. So that's why we have a First and Second Amendment, so that people could totally have freedom. They can have their own opinions. They can think for themselves and they can defend themselves. Right now we have a situation where our open border policy has allowed in millions of people. I believe it's 8 million in the last 3 years, which is three times the size of Nebraska. Oh, we've let in the size of three states here, and we saw what happened in Israel just a few weeks ago. It doesn't seem like a coincidence to me that this thing happened 3 weeks ago in Israel, and now you've got a shooter that's been on the run for, 3 days now? They still haven't gotten him, to my knowledge, and he's out there with a assault style weapon, and we've got video of him, and he looks scary and everything like that. At the same time, where we have potential sleeper cells within the United States that could come alive at any second, and we could see attacks much like we saw at the southern border of Israel happen here in the United States. One thing that I saw in Israel, and I don't know what the gun laws are in Israel, is that it seemed like the citizens had no way to defend themselves. You don't hear about any Hamas people coming into a house and getting a surprise, which is what they would get if they came into my house.
Right.
I'm just saying that right now is more important than ever in American history that these gun laws are not tampered with. And Barry, you can see that the American people realize this. I was just talking to a friend of mine just the other day who talked about the fact that, hey, I need to get some ammunition. And she went out there and to a very popular place, and they were completely out of stock. Wow. The fact is that people know this instinctively. They also know that we have a federal government that seems to be against the citizens,
as we can
see from the southern border and many other things, that they need to protect themselves. This whole notion that Hey, I'll call 911 and have a social worker come over and try to talk to these Hamas people is absolutely ridiculous. And we need to be able to take care of ourselves. This country is actually based on being self-sufficient and having your neighbors come in and help, not necessarily the authorities. And that's what we need to, unify right now for our own protection. And the Second Amendment is a cornerstone of how we can do that. Now, here's the thing, Barry. When I take a look at what happened in Maine, I don't know what's going on there because this is sort of like the fog of war. I heard immediately that 22 people died. Now I hear it's 18. I heard immediately that over 50 people were injured. Now I hear it's like 15 or something like that. So it's the fog of war, right? We don't know exactly what's going on. But what I do know is this. I took a look at a CDC report that came out in 2021, and it showed gun violence in Maine for 2020 and 2021. And what I saw on there was the gun deaths that have happened through suicide versus homicide versus accident. And in those 2 years, you had 159 suicides by gun and then 170 suicides by gun. Respectively, you had 12 murders by gun and 9 murders by gun. And then 3 and 2 were accidents. Okay, so
but my God, 170 suicides by gun in a year? That's awful, man.
So what we're seeing here, exactly, Barry, is not a gun violence homicide issue. What we're seeing is a mental health issue.
Has
been ignored by our federal government. Instead of actually talking about the mental health problems, which I see that they themselves have caused through lockdowns, through the type of education, through these federalized unions that we have, through social media that we talked about earlier, that they refuse to control because they're all getting paid off handsomely to allow this to happen. Yep. And then instead of actually looking at themselves in the mirror and saying, we caused this problem, they're going to look at us and steal our right to protect ourselves.
Yeah.
That is heinous. And what needs to happen is we need to have a level set, and we need to have somebody that can speak calmly and accurately about what the actual problem is so that people can get out of their emotional state here, because that's really what the media is trying to do, is drive us all into this crazy emotional state. And and then if we're in that state, they can then come in, swoop in, and say, we'll take care of the whole thing. Here's these laws. We already have a lot of laws on the books to protect ourselves from people having guns. But here's a bigger problem, is the HIPAA laws prevent background checks to look into any type of mental health issues. That's the problem. What? Well, why would we even have a background?
I could see a double-edged sword there, though. I could,
I can too. But
you have your right to privacy.
Why would I want a gun to go into somebody's hands that is a schizophrenic? Barry, this person that's supposedly on the lam, and I say supposedly because I never know what to believe. I don't even know if this guy's real now. but here's the thing, is that this guy supposedly was in a mental institution because he was hearing voices speak to him. He had threatened, he was a National Guard, or in the reserves. And he had threatened to shoot up the reserves camp. Okay, so this guy is mentally unstable. And also he was a shooting instructor. So
all that
don't
stuff,
you think,
yeah, it's a bad
don't you
mix.
Think, like, if you've got a mental problem that maybe you shouldn't be a shooting instructor?
Yeah, there should be a way about this, where your privacy is protected, yet you're put on a list by medical professionals or what have you, whoever deems to be reliable. And God, I mean, how do you do that today? But you're put on a list that says for 5 years, you cannot have a own a gun for 5 years, but check back in 5 years and see if you really want a gun in 5 years, you have to reapply and let's see. And in other words, your medical records aren't put out there as to why. And here is exactly what you did. Just the no, you're on the no, you can't have one list until you could prove otherwise.
Well, what we're seeing, Barry, is almost all of these notorious mass shootings involve mental health issues.
Sure, of course.
And I mean, every one of them.
Of course,
this is what it is. But
you got to be the other thing.
I think the dilemma that we're talking about is how can we prevent these people from having guns? And I don't know if we could 100% mitigate that.
Correct,
but here's the other thing is that he comes into a crowded bar. It must have been crowded because of all the people that were injured and killed, and he just can have his way there. Now, this is a crazy idea, but if we had open carry laws, maybe he would think twice about going into a place and bringing a gun and shooting in the first place, because everyone's going to return fire on that person.
I've always pretty much agreed with that. Let me show you something real quick, which is going to be kind of funny and support your point. So this is Google News that I was looking at this morning in Cleveland.com in my backyard. The headline is "Woman thwarts two armed male robbery suspects by showing her own firearm."
Right?
This is in my backyard in Shaker Heights.
I mean, we're seeing this all the time. I saw a video yesterday. Anne Marie showed me of a accident that happened on the 10 freeway in Los Angeles. They were run off the road by one car, and now they're on the side of the road. This was a setup. Another car comes in and robs the two people in the car that was wrecked. They were all wearing hoodies and masks and everything. At gunpoint, they robbed these guys. And broad daylight, and the reason I know about it is because the people that were in traffic filmed it. No one tried to help or anything like that. These people were just robbed just right on the side of the road and it was amazing. It really was amazing to see this. And, you know, I'm not saying that if these guys had guns that everything would have been okay. But what I am saying is this, is that if these guys had an inkling that maybe these other guys had guns, they probably wouldn't have done that in the first place.
I agree.
That, you know, this whole gun rights thing has been turned on its head to the point where we think in America that guns cause violence. Like if you have a gun, it's going to cause you to shoot somebody, that the gun itself is the influence. And, you know, I saw the new Speaker of the House last night, Mike Johnson, speaking. And one of the things he said that I thought was right on. It's not a gun issue. It's a human heart issue.
Yeah.
What is wrong with the heart of our people today? Why are all of these people experiencing mental health issues? Why do we have people in our college campuses right now marching around saying, chanting, "Gas the Jews," or "We want genocide for the Jews"? That's heinous. What happened to these young people that used to mobilize immediately in March when they saw human suffering?
For peace.
Right. Yeah. When they saw humans, we've seen human suffering on both sides, right? But we immediately saw this. I've never seen anything like what we saw in Israel happen. Mm-hmm. And yet we have people en masse marching around saying "gas the Jew." How did that happen? How could that happen? I remember seeing video of what happened in Nazi Germany and thinking that can't possibly happen again.
Right.
This was a long time ago. It seemed like a long time ago because it happened before I was born, but this could never happen again. People have evolved since then, and boom, it happened overnight. How can you even explain that?
Well, we're very tribal. I'm staying on this page for a reason. I wanted to get to a couple of things. We're going to have to get going here pretty soon. But we're very tribal by nature, and we think that we're so evolved, and we're not. I mean, even our sports teams today that we get so rabid about and like to hate each other for, and it's supposed to be in a playful way, but if you talk about Ohio State and Michigan fans, they could get pretty damn violent to each other, not to mention Pittsburgh and Cleveland fans, which I find ridiculous. But it's the arena, it's the Coliseum. It's still the same thing. Yeah. And even when we just go off to college and pick your fraternity or sorority or whatever, you're still picking a team. And there's power in numbers. There's safety in numbers. So I don't know. I think all of this preys on instincts, biological instincts that are misplaced today. But I wanted to just show you on Google News, like I said, I like to look at it. You see Fox headline right here, right below it, you see CNN headline. But they're both, in this case, saying the same thing. And by the way, their written material, online material, both of them are much better than the political commentary that you get on the TV. That's a bunch of garbage.
I agree with that.
Yeah, yep. Don't even watch that crap. So the U.S. military carries out
airstrikes. I do like some of it, though, to be honest.
Well, that's fine. But know what you're getting. Know what you're watching. Yep. Airstrikes on facilities in Syria that are operated by Iranian-backed forces. Yep. CNN corroborates that. Same thing. My point is, damn, Merle, we're getting close to World War III here.
Yeah, it's happening, man. I don't know how how it could be stopped, to be honest with you.
Oh, God, that's a horrible thing.
Yeah, well, you look at our government, and first off, if you're Israel, would you want the United States coming in and giving you any advice after what you saw happen in Afghanistan?
Yeah, exactly.
It's almost like you brought up the Cleveland Browns. It's like, you want to win the Super Bowl, you don't bring the coaching staff from the Cleveland Browns over and ask them how to win the Super Bowl.
There you go. Oh my God.
That's ridiculous. But
wait a minute. I know this is switching gears, but this is really important. First I heard of this was this morning. I didn't even get a chance to read the article. I pulled this up before we just got on. Dean Phillips launches primary challenge against Biden. Whoa.
Okay, have you ever heard of Dean Phillips before?
No. This is on CNN.
He doesn't have a snowball's chance in hell.
But really, against Biden, I would think a 5-year-old would have a good chance.
At RFK Jr. I mean, how is it?
He had to go independent.
They completely shut him out. I mean,
and they did to Tulsi Gabbard in 2016.
Yeah, it's a machine. Well, and also the president wasn't a Democrat at that time. So when you have a sitting president, they can really control the primary, and he's not going to let that happen. The Democrats are not going to let that happen. Let me go back to this thing again, because you talked about teams and how teams operate and how we get so emotional and everything like that. And
call them tribes.
I noticed also when Biden was in Israel talking, and he was talking to Netanyahu, and he said he was talking about the bombing of that hospital, and he says, it looks like the other team did that. And he called it a team, Hamas, a team. Yeah. I thought that was really an interesting choice of words. But I was having a text conversation with my daughter about this, who's very disturbed about this. And she was saying that, you know, I just wanted to read. I was so impressed with how she's thinking about it. And also that maybe a lot of other young people are thinking the same way. She's about 30 years old. And she was saying, you know, everyone is taking sides as if it's a ball game or something. But I don't think that makes sense. We shouldn't be encouraging killing. We should be trying to figure out a method for maintaining peace. I've seen people saying the most insanely evil things about the Palestinians and the Israeli people so openly. I understand that people are hurting, but that doesn't justify massacre. The worst part is I've been seeing people equate a neutral standing, or even people not posting about their opinions on social media regarding this matter, in parentheses, she says, which I don't think people should always do. I agree. Yes. But she says that people that are not posting opinions are being accused of supporting genocide. So she says, so it seems no matter what you do, people will make you a villain. The division knows no bounds. Isn't that interesting? Her perspective.
Very well said.
She was saying also earlier that she's been pretty confused about this whole conflict, because she says, I'm seeing so much clashing information from my Muslim friends, my Israeli friends, and the news. I just want people to stop killing. I love her heart on this whole thing. I'm right there with you.
I want
people to stop killing. And, you know, what I was, I sent her that Kennedy video because what I told her was that, you know, what's been posed here is an impossible conundrum to answer. You take a look at Hamas, and they're over there saying, well, you know, the world has this natural inclination to help set up a two-state solution. But I read the Hamas charter twice this week. And when you take a look at their charter, which is everything they stand for, they are not interested in a two-state solution whatsoever. They want the Israelis to die. They want the Jewish state to disappear. There's no negotiation with an entity that wants you to die. Mm-hmm. And so that's just out the window. So you're not going to come up with a solution here between the two. There's no compromising with a person that wants you to die. So really, this now comes down to a place where we just have to look at people that we don't agree with, and we have to look beyond that whole thing and see them as people. What bothers me
about this so much, you're getting there, and Hallie is there, your daughter, is I said it since day two, because day one I got bought into. I got bought in with the emotion. Day two, I was like, whoa, I see what's going on. I've seen this movie before. I'll say it again. I think our only role, see, first of all, we think that we have a role here, that we're the world police, judge, jury, and executioner, and we're supposed to do something about this. There's 198 other countries, and the Middle East is oil rich and all their own kind of culture. Our only role should be extreme diplomacy over there. Get them all to the table, pool their funds however they see fit, and talk it out and come to the resolution as they see fit. Let's not pull another Afghanistan, Iraq, Vietnam, Yemen, blah, blah, blah. Go right on down the line. Let's not keep murdering people on our dime. Let's just not do that. Let's just do whatever kind of diplomacy we can over there. And how egotistical is it of us to think that we should do more? That bothers me.
Yeah, I agree. And that's how we got in Ukraine and why we're there. And, exactly. You know, and now, and we always set up situations that are not accountable. So we're paying our tax dollars. We have no idea how these things are being used in war, which can be very, very evil. And so, and depending on how it's being implemented. So yeah, I get exactly what you're saying here. And let's just throw this in there, that we have Americans that were killed in this this debacle, and we have Americans that are hostages now. So we actually have a stake in this.
Skin in the game, yeah.
And you have to look at, okay, in a hostage situation, do you just drop a whole bunch of bombs on the hostages? The hostages? Because that seems to be what's happening right now. Yeah. We have hostages there and bombs are falling out of the sky. Are we blowing up the hostages? It seems to me like the first thing we need to do is figure out how to negotiate those hostages out of there. And, you know, as an American president, I would think if I were the president, my number one thing to do would be get my Americans out of that situation.
Correct.
And also, I need to be saying, you killed Americans. That's wrong. And there's going to be repercussions if anything like that is going to happen again. This is a serious line that you just crossed.
I think that we would be much more effective along all those lines if what we really threatened was forming a coalition, diplomacy, getting the Middle East, all the players in the Middle East, their best minds to figure out what the hell to do with their culture and their
I agree
problems.
With that. But here's the thing too. And I agree with your diplomacy tact. I think that's the most logical thing to do, but the first thing you do isn't give them $100 million.
No.
If you're going to use diplomacy, you use the $100 million to get what you want. Now we know Joe Biden knows how to do that, because when he was in Ukraine, he said, "You're not getting the $1 billion until you do this." And it worked. Unfortunately, it was a criminal act. But I'm just saying, the guy knows how to get something for the money. So why didn't we use the $100 million to get the hostages out? And if we didn't use it to get the hostages out, doesn't it seem like there must be some kind of reason why they didn't do that? Maybe to prolong this whole situation?
I wouldn't doubt that.
It seems like people are very much benefiting from the potential of a prolonged war in Israel.
Oh my God. It was day two. I think you and I were talking about it. I was certainly thinking about it. I was just like, okay, when are we going to announce that we're going to give Israel billions of dollars? Oh, it was the next day.
It happened immediately, right? I mean, and then the interesting thing too is we know that if we give any money to them, it's going to go directly to the people that want to kill more Israelis. And we know they built that whole tunnel system in Gaza based on, I mean, built off of our own tax dollars that we gave to them. So the whole thing is so jacked up. I mean, this is terrible. This is
end of the day. I just think that your daughter really said it best, that we got people incensed in this country. It is a coordinated effort through the media. We got everybody wanting to screaming, let's murder. Let's take a side. Who are we going to murder first? And that's what it's about right now. It's disgusting.
And you know, what's interesting to me is I don't see Jewish people here in America marching around saying, we want genocide for the Palestinians. I'm just not seeing that. I'm only seeing it the other way. And it seems to me that, you know, that speaks volumes in itself.
Yeah, we just got to stop letting ourselves be manipulated.
I agree with that too, Barry.
Take a breath. Yep. Yeah. With that,
Barry, great stuff we've covered here today. You know what? Tell us where they can find the show and everything. We always neglect to do that.
Yes. Yes. please go to over50startingover.com. Spell that all out. And sign up and get all this to your email box as it happens. And please like and share if you go to Apple Podcasts. That's what I suggest you do. Go to Apple Podcasts, subscribe. Please give us a 5-star rating. If you like to watch, go on YouTube, Over 50 Starting Over, and subscribe there. Give us a like and share. Please share our show so that we can reach more people.
Right on.
With that, buddy, you got it. We are doing a winery this weekend on Sunday. Just want to wind up on a lighter note, though the weather's supposed to suck. It's a winery.
Oh, that's too bad.
But it's a family thing. It's with Lisa's Aunt Margie, who just seems to beat cancer. She's official now, rang the bell.
Yes.
For
the
second time. You did a great prayer with us.
Oh, I felt that one. I knew that. I'm so glad to hear that praise report.
Yeah. So we're going to have a brilliant weekend in these regards. You got anything special going on?
Well, you know, every weekend is special. Sure. I know I'm going to be getting out in the nature because it's going to be beautiful weather.
You're entering your time of year now.
Yeah. It's like right now, it's perfect. 80 degree weather during the day. At night, it gets into the 60s. I don't even have to have my air conditioner on anymore. And in most of the day, it's really nice out now. Like when you go outside, it doesn't hurt.
It doesn't hurt. Oh, what a way to put it.
Yeah.
Well, I hope in a few months I can say the same. Our last winter was very mild. So I hope things are going the same. I think it is. All right, buddy. All right. With that, terrific podcast. Lisa, we did not talk about UFOs. She said don't do that.
We talked about it a little bit.
I thought you were going
Dave Chappelle.
Yeah. I was going, oh, please don't. Though I love talking about that stuff. All right, girl. All right. Much fun. Love you, buddy. Have a good day.
Love you, man. Take care. Bye.